starting Parsha Shoftim. It's going to be sort of more quicker things. The first four, Shoftim, Shoftim, Tithim, Lecha, B'chol, Sha'recha. The literal translation is you should make judges and officers in all of your gates. You should put them all over your gates. And the pshat that they give behind that is that Sanhedrin has to be by the gates of the city. It's got to be open to the place where everybody, when they come in, they immediately know where Sanhedrin is, so they don't have to search around for where the Beis Din is. And Shoftim are also policemen. You got to have policemen there, so people that are watching over everything. That Hashem has given you for your shvatim v'shaftos al mishpat tzedek, and they will judge the people al mishpat tzedek, a true mishpat. So there's a drush over here. The Ben Ish Chai says it. It's an awesome drush. He says that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us three things that have tremendous potential for sin, tremendous potential for good things. If you know how to use it correctly, they can be done for good. But if you don't know how to use it correctly, they can be done for bad. They are the eyes, the ears, and the mouth. The eyes, the ears, and the mouth. The eyes can see tremendous things and be able to tell you everything that's there in front of you. But they can also do something bad. They could see things that you really don't want to see. You never really want to see. They could see terrible, terrible things. That's your eyes. Your ears can hear things. Can hear things from other people. They can tell you when something's coming. They can tell you when something's about to hit you. They can tell you all these things. But it can also let you hear Lashon Hara. It can let you hear all these bad things that you really don't want to hear at all. Your mouth, obviously, has tremendous potential to be able to say words of wisdom, things that are unbelievable things within Torah and everything, and the only way to really express yourself in Torah is by speaking it out. However, you could also say tremendously bad things. You can make fun of people. You could do terrible things with your mouth. So all those three things, Paul, you were going to ask something?
Yeah, why not touch? You could kill someone with your hand also.
Definitely true. Definitely true. These, I think it's more referring to things that are on your face, but I definitely hear you. I definitely hear you. As opposed to, let's say, the sense of smell. The sense of smell does not really matter. It doesn't really matter when you smell something. There's not much you can do with your nose that can be for bad, unless you sniff out a crook, I guess, and you
and
smell.
My fridge,
yeah, I mean, it's, obviously it can help people, you know, but like the question is, does it really like affect people for bad? These three things are all made with their own. They're made with their very own stoppages, their own gates. Something in front of them to be able to stop them from doing something. In case you see something that you know is bad, you have a gate in front of your eyes, your eyelids, to be able to close your eyes and not be able to see what's there in front of you. It's a gate that's put right there in front of you. The ears, although they're not exactly on, the earlobes were made just for that reason. Hopefully they're not attached to your skin, because that would be disgusting and weird. But if you have regular earlobes, I'm joking. By the way, if you have regular earlobes that hang down, the purpose of those earlobes, according to the Gemara Ksuvos and Daf Hey, is to go in. There's a whole machlokus, because the Gemara Ksuvos also says that's why your fingers are separate, to be able to put your hand inside your ear so that you can't hear anything, so you make sure. So the Chassam Sofer says, yes, that's true. However, if you touch earwax, that's considered something that might be, you might have to wash your hands after that instead of learning. So you don't want to touch directly. So instead, the Chassam Sofer says you're supposed to put your earlobes in your ear and close it up with your fingers. So it's a double thing. It's a double sort of a covering. So although it's not an automatic covering, but it is something where you could just quickly go like that. The mouth has not only the covering of the teeth, where the teeth are there, but if you need an orthodontist like I do, then you also have the lip that go in front that could stop you from speaking. Then in case you said something, you could always just close up your mouth on your own by saying to yourself, oh, I can't say that. I can't say that. Those are the sha'arim that are there. There are gates that are there. Says the Ben Ish Chai, the pshat is, shoftim v'shoftim titen l'chol b'chol sha'recha. Put shoftim and shoftim out by your gates. Number one, judges. Judge what is going to be a good thing for me to see, a good thing for me to hear, and a good thing for me to say. And shoftim, officers, in other words, make yourself, say to yourself, I really want to do this. If you put shoftim and shoftim, titen l'chol b'chol sha'recha, then asher Hashem l'kach nosen l'chol, that God gave you for all these purposes to do good things, shoftos al mishpat tzedek, and be sure to judge out exactly what you're supposed to do with them, and they should be all good. That's what you should know what to do, and you should know how to do it. That's the beginning of the parsha. Now, Pasuk Zion says, the pasuk says, "Yada edim tiabo barishona la misov yakol on ba'achrona ubiarta ramikabecha." It's an awesome pasuk. If you two edim see something happen, they see a murder happen, they are the first ones to kill that guy. Meaning, if the guy's chayiv hereg, then who kills him? You'd think it would be a shliach beis din, like the special executioner guy. There is no official special executioner guy that's made by beis din. The executioner are the edim that saw the thing happen. The question is, what did they do? All of a sudden these guys can become murderers? They saw this thing happen, and then all of a sudden you can expect them to go ahead and try to kill this guy? They're the ones who throw the first stone if the guy's chayiv skila. They're the ones who are supposed to take the rope and pull if the guy's chayiv chenek. And they're the ones who are supposed to put the hot lead down his throat if he's chayiv sreifan. So too by Harig, they're the ones who are supposed to take the ropes and cut it so hard until his neck comes off. Those guys are really going to be able to do it. You expect the Adam to be able to do that? The Baal Shem Tov is an unbelievable thing. He speaks about it regarding something else entirely. He said that nothing is coincidence. If you hear something during the day, and I taught this to kids in camp, it's very funny to hear what they came out with, but if you hear something during the day that you think has absolutely no bearing on you, but you overheard a conversation, there's a reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu made you hear that conversation. You ever hear those like Ashkacha Pratis stories, or like somebody was talking to the other guy, and he's just like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that guy was, and immediately like went somewhere, and all of a sudden you saw that guy, and you're like, hey, I can't believe, and all of a sudden something happened. There's always reasons why HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends you to hear that conversation that other people are having that you think has absolutely nothing to do with you. There's a reason why that's there. It says the Ben Ish Chai, he was once riding in a wagon with a bunch of his Talmidim. It's a Chassidus story, so again, it's got to have a wagon. He's sitting with all of his Talmidim sitting in the wagon, and he was telling them this concept, and the guy said, I can't believe it. It's not true. It can't be true. The Talmidim just didn't believe him. He said, I guarantee you it's true. You can overhear conversations, and you can even tell the sins that the person did the night before by what he says. He said, it's impossible. They said, so he said to them, listen, this wagon driver was Bol and Nida last night. He was with a woman who was in her menstrual cycle last night. He did that last night. So if you follow him, I guarantee you he'll say a line that'll make you figure out that that's what he did the night before. So the Talmidim said, okay. They followed as soon as the wagon driver stopped in front of a city, he ran inside a tavern. Talmidim all ran after him. They listened to him. They listened to him as he talked to the barkeep, you know, the guy who was behind the counter. And he said to the barkeep, quick, give me a drink. Give me a drink right now. So the guy said, wait a second, my cups are still dirty. Let me clean it out and then I'll give it back to you. And he said, I don't care if it's dirty. I want the drink right now. And the Talmidim took that as a sign that they didn't care if it was dirty, if it was a Nida, he takes the drink right then. He took that woman right then in that moment. That's how the Baal Shem Tov said, that you can understand certain things from the way people talk. Says Rav Wolfson, it's the exact same thing regarding Freudianism. In other words, using Freud's whole theory of people sort of let slide what happened to them that very day, goes by Adam as well. If you see something that was tame, if you see something that was wrong, it shows you that you have a chisaron in that very thing. If you saw someone murder another person, that means that according to the Baal Shem Tov, says Rav Wolfson, there is a chisaron within you that you want to murder somebody, or there's something within you that makes you want to murder somebody. There's something within you that has that feeling of, I want to kill that guy. If you see znus, you have a tiny, tiny little bit of znus that's within you. If you see someone stealing, you have a tiny little bit. You have a bit of tumah within you that makes you want to steal. All the terrible things that are out there in the world, you have within yourself, and they're terrible things within yourself that you can turn, that you just haven't been able to do it. You've been able to control yourself, but it's there. You have it deep down inside you. It's hiding within you, waiting to come out whenever you'll let it out. That's a terrible, terrible thing within you. The simon is by seeing it, and that those Adam that saw these things have to get rid of that little bit of tumah within them. So what a Kaddish Baruch Hu does is he lets them see that person do that action, let them see the person committing adultery, committing murder, going and stealing something, and then lets them go and punish that guy. And they are the executioners of that punishment. So they do a davar pa'ula, something that's an action to get rid of that thing from that person. And by doing that, they destroy the Yetzer Hara within them because they see what's going to happen to a person who does that thing. Thus, the end of the pasuk is v'yad kol ha'edim the yad of the Adam go first. Yad kolam bachorna. Everybody else goes last. Uviarta rami kirbecham. By doing so, you'll destroy all the evil from among you. Not literally from among you as a people. It means from amongst you, from within you yourself. You'll destroy all the evil that's within you. You'll be able to get rid of all that by going ahead and destroying that. By going ahead and punishing that person over there. That's the idea behind it. The Bnei Sasker says it's based on pasuk ches ki polimimcha davar lamishpat. If something is too wondrous from you, something is too far out there and you don't know how to understand it, you can't understand it at all, bein dom ledom, bein din ledin, bein nega lenega, between different types of blood, different types of dinim, different types of tsaras, different rivos bisharecha, different types of fights that are happening in your gates, but come to v'alisa l'malkom ashayivcha Hashem alakecha bo. You should get up and go to the place that God will choose, which is referring to the base of Mikdash and Sanhedrin in the base of Mikdash. There's a lot of stuff going on here. What's his key polimimcha? So the time of Menhagim quotes a Bnei Yisrael, and the Bnei Yisrael says, we know there's a concept. If the base of Mikdash wasn't rebuilt in your lifetime, if it wasn't rebuilt in your lifetime, it's as if it was destroyed in your lifetime. And the question is obvious. What in the world does one have to do with the other? It wasn't rebuilt during the lifetime of the Gra. It wasn't rebuilt in the lifetime of the Baal Shem Tov. It wasn't rebuilt in the lifetime of Rabbi Akiva Eger, the Chassam Sofer, of all these tremendous Gedolim who lived for hundreds of years. Rashi, the Rambam, all the Rishonim, all the early Achronim. It wasn't rebuilt during that time, so it's as if they destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. How could that be? How does that make any sense? It just wasn't built, but it's not like they did anything to actively destroy it. So how does that work? So B'nai Yisrael says a concept. This concept is a crazy little concept that happens to have a lot of emes within it. It says that if you ever don't understand something in learning, you sit there and you say to yourself, you know what, I just don't get this. I have no idea what's going on. I don't know how to understand this. I don't know how to put it into words. Whatever it is, you just don't get it. The reason why is because everybody has a brick that they're supposed to make for the Beis HaMikdash. Some people have a tremendous brick, like the Gra would have a huge brick that he was supposed to make. And some people, like us, like me, let's say, will have a tiny, tiny little brick. It'll be like that, you know, that tiny little thing. But it's that size that I have to build for the Beis HaMikdash. That brick not only stands for all the mitzvos that I do within this world, it stands for all the Torah that I learn within this world. So every single mitzvah that I have fits within that brick, and every single bit of Torah that I have is within that brick. If I miss out on a mitzvah that I was supposed to do, that means that I'm missing out on a little bit of Torah that I should have understood. So that brick represents all those little things within it. So let's just say there's something I don't understand and I'm sitting there and I'm trying to learn and I don't understand it whatsoever. The reason why is because I didn't do the mitzvah that I was supposed to do in order to understand that part of the Torah. Once I do that mitzvah, then I'll be able to understand it. Once I do tshuva a little bit, then I'll be able to understand it. But the pshat is that in order to make that brick full, I have to daven, I have to do tshuva, I have to do as many mitzvahs as I can. Then I'll be zochet all the Torah and then I'll be able to understand, as high as my understanding will go, everything that there is for me to learn in this world. But if I don't understand something, that means I myself am lacking within myself, and I have to go build that up. That means that if you don't understand something, that means within you, you've got a problem. You obviously have a problem within your learning, and there's something that's missing within your learning that you've got to fill up. So what should you do? So the pasuk says, "Ki pale mimcha davar lemishpat." If you don't understand something when you're learning, and you're sitting there and you're like, "I don't get it. I don't get what I'm supposed to do." Bein dam ledam, bein din ledin, bein nega lenega, divu rivos bisharacha. All the machlokasim that are out there within the Torah. The kamta. Kamta is become. Stand yourself up and say, okay, I gotta do tshuva. Stand yourself straight up to God and say, alright, I'm doing tshuva. Start working on yourself and start doing something back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in order to fulfill that brick, to make the brick whole again. And by doing that, you'll make the full brick and you'll bring it up to the place that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has chosen, which is the Beis HaMikdash.
Where does it say we have to do that?
Where does it say
the bricks?
It's not, it's a concept in Shemayim. It's not literal, obviously, but it's something in which you have a certain amount that you're supposed to do, and that's the brick that we're referring to. That's Valisa Alamakom Ashayiv HaShem Al-Kechabo, that you bring it up and you'll create that brick for the Beis HaMikdash. Says the B'nai Yisachar. If you don't do that, what that essentially means is that you didn't make your brick for the Beis HaMikdash. So it's like you had a certain amount you're supposed to build. You're a builder. You're supposed to build the Beis HaMikdash. The way the Mashiach is going to come, the way the Beis HaMikdash is going to come down, and if you fulfill your brick. If you didn't fulfill your brick, you're missing out on a little bit of that brick. You might as well have destroyed a little part of the Beis HaMikdash. You had that much to do, and you missed out on, let's just say, a third of that brick. You just lost everything. So the more you don't understand and don't even bother to try to understand it more, that's what you lose out on. I'll say this, I've said this out before. My third year in yeshiva, in Beis Yisrael, I told my Rebbe that I didn't understand something, and he told me, crazy concept, that it was Rabbi Lehrfeld, the Rosh Yeshiva, said, all you have to do is take out a tehillim and daven. Go to a corner, say two or three kapitel tehillim, and daven. And by doing that, you'll automatically understand it. And I've tried it. It works every single time. Whenever you have a question, you don't get something, you just go to the corner and call it like a psychological thing. You're like resetting your mind and you're like getting yourself off the subject and then bringing yourself right back in. Call it whatever you want. Regardless, it works every single time. You might not fully get it, but you get it to a point where like, oh, now I understand. I had a problem like this before. Now it's not a real problem. Happens every single time. I've done it hundreds of times. Hundreds of times. Rosh Yeshiva told me he's done it thousands of times. And that was back then. It's just it's a crazy concept where you bring yourself up, and that's the v'kamtav alisa l'makom ashiv karsham alakecha bo. That's the idea behind this whole pasuk. The Chassam Sofer says another thing: v'kamtav alisa, you should get up and go. So Rashi says that it teaches us that the Beis Hamikdash is gavoa mikol aratzos, that the Beis Hamikdash is the highest point in the land. It's the highest point on earth. And the question that everybody asks is, what does that mean? It's the highest point on earth. That can't be. The Himalayan mountains, the Alps, the Appalachian mountains, go through the Rocky Mountains, everywhere. The Beis Hamikdash, if you go up, I mean, think about it. You walk from, let's just say, Yafo, straight up to the Beis Hamikdash, it's not that high. We're not talking to a very high place. So yeah, they say that there was destruction. Part of the mountain was destroyed in destruction. Hordes took down part of the mountain. There's all those. It's true. But still, how high could the mountain have been that it was so much higher than, I don't know, Mount Everest? It's the highest place in the world. How could that be? And it's not like Rashi didn't know about these mountains. He lived by the Alps. Don't tell me that he never traveled to the Alps. He has. There are meisim of Rashi going to Italy. So he must have passed by the Alps. It's kind of, and he went to Eretz Yisrael as well. So it's not like he couldn't have seen these things or seen where the Makom HaMikdash was. He saw it. So how could it possibly be? And how do we understand that Maimar Chazal? So obviously high could also mean in spirituality. They say it's spiritual.
Doesn't necessarily mean literally.
Right, it wouldn't mean literally in physicality. However, the Chassam Sofer is an unbelievable concept. Very good, very, very good. There's a shot like this. You could look at the world like this. Now we know the earth rotates. However, there's Yerushalayim Shalmala and Yerushalayim Shalmata. Yerushalayim Shalmala is Yerushalayim where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in with the Beis HaMikdash Lamala. It's the third Beis HaMikdash is going to come down eventually when it's time for the Beis HaMikdash to come down. We have Yerushalayim Shalmata. Now, our spot, wherever you look at it, Shamayim is right on top of it. So even if the earth rotates, Shamayim goes with it. Shamayim is directly on top of Yerushalayim. So you have this little tissue paper over here. Let's say the Beis HaMikdash is the topmost point right there. And it would be, right? Because it's the top of the world and the Shamayim is right above it. So no matter how it goes, Shamayim is right there. So the topmost point is always going to be that point over here. It doesn't make a difference how big the mountain is over here. How big the Appalachian or the Himalayan or the Alps or any other mountain is, because that's on the side. It's not going high. The highest point on earth is going to be the topmost point of the world, which is the place that's directly underneath the sky. It could be 5 feet tall. It's going to be the highest point in the world because you're always looking at the world as if that's the topmost point. By doing that, you can understand that Eretz Yisrael and the Beis HaMikdash are the Gavoa Mikol Aratzos and Gavoa Mikol HaMakomos. It's the highest place in the world because nothing else can come anywhere near it. That's an unbelievable concept. Now, the only question the Chassam Sofer is Har HaZeisim bigger than Har HaZeisim, which is right next to it, is it bigger than Har HaMoriah? That's the only question, but we'd have to assume not, and then the vort will work perfectly. That's the Chassam Sofer. And if not, then yes, you have to say that it's a spiritual high. It's not the exact, you know, it's not exact. The exact thing is right there, up in there.
They said the world is created from the point.
Right, that's also true, that the world is created from that point, and that's also why we're starting off from there and taking everything from that point. That'll be the topmost point, that'll always be considered that.
And Masada is the lowest point on earth?
You can say such a thing. The Dead Sea. No, the Dead Sea is the lowest point on earth,
right,
isn't it?
No.
Dead Sea is the lowest
point. Yeah, everywhere exactly. Wherever right opposite the... Opposite.
That's a crazy thing, no? But it's still just a crazy concept that you're supposed to have the highest point in the land and the lowest point in the land within the same ground.
But if you're using the same criteria, it doesn't work that way.
Right, it definitely wouldn't. Definitely wouldn't. Definitely wouldn't. So 1711. I like remembering this just because if anybody asked you this question, you remember 1711, you remember 7-Eleven? So you can remember 1711 in Deuteronomy, that if anybody asks you where is it a mitzvah to listen to the words of the Chachamim, you tell them 1711. Lo sasur mi kol advarim asher yagidu l'chamim. Lo sasur mi nadavar shagidu l'chayam nismol. You're not allowed to turn away from the things that Chazal tell you. Anything that the rabbis tell you, you can't turn away right or left. That would be your right and my left. And then, either way, if they tell you that something is the opposite, you have to believe them, you have to listen to them and tell you, if they tell you that my left is really my right, and that my right is really my left, it's not true. Really, it's just the opposite. Really, it's just the opposite. That really what Chazal says is true. Now, we have to understand that. First of all, in Lo Sasser, it's the end of the pasuk Yud Aleph, Yud Zayin, Yud Aleph. So, the question is that a d'oraisa? The Rambam holds that it's one of the 613 mitzvot. Always listen to the Rabbanan. But that means that every Durabanan, for example, to not swim on Shabbos, to not make medicine on Shabbos, to do all those things, are going to be considered or not take medicine on Shabbos. Those Durabanans would be a Dioraisa. There would be Asur Midioraisa to do. Every Durabanan that you can think of, any Durabanan that's out there would be an Isur Dioraisa, because it's all based on a Pasuk in the Torah, Lo Sasur Mina Davar Shea Gidulacha. That's how the Rambam puts it. The Rambam Mamish lists it in the 613 mitzvos. Don't turn away, listen to what the Rabbanan say. And that even rhymes, so it works out even better that way. So what's the deal with that? And the Ramban argues completely. The Ramban says, no, it can't be. And he gives two really big questions. Number one, by a Suffolk Dioraisa, we go Lechumrah. Suffolk Dorabanan, we go Lekula. But if it's Suffolk Dorabanan is really a Dioraisa, then why do we go Lekula? It should be Lechumrah as well. Why should that be?
Why can't Chazal say what they want and say that there's have less prayer?
If we're saying that a Dorabanan is a Dioraisa, so they can't, it's a Dioraisa already. They can't decide what's going to be Lechumrah and what's Lekula. It's a Dioraisa. You have to go Lechumrah. It's a Suffolk.
They can say what their words are and what priority you should give their words.
Did they say anything about a Suffolk? So if you have a suffix about that Durabanan, what are you going to do? It's a Dioraisa, basically. So you should go Lechumrah. That's his first question. That's his kasha on the Rambam.
There'd be no concept of Durabanan at all.
Right. There'd be no concept whatsoever. That's really the question also. And really, exactly. And that's what he's trying to say. It can't be that you can say it's really a Dioraisa. It's just an Asmachta. That's his basic answer. And number two is, why is a Dioraisa Docha Durabanan? Why is it Marcha Durabanan? A Durabanan is the power of a Dioraisa. So why is one mitzvah saseh Docha another mitzvah saseh? Why is one more powerful than the other? They're both mitzvot saseh. Why is one docha the other? So the Meshech Chachma says, this is a tremendous concept. I saw this year, and although this is not like my normal stuff to be able to say, I think it's an unbelievable concept to just think about for a second. The idea is like this. He says in Asmachta, it's not a Dioraisa whatsoever. The Meshech Chachma says, listen, who am I to go in between these Haram HaGadolim? Obviously, the way he's going to say it. However, the Emes is with the Rambam. The Emes is with the Rambam. Why? How is a Durabanan different from a regular Dioraisa? How is Lo Sasur are different from a regular Dioraisa? So we understand like this. Mitzvot are nitzchi. We know that all mitzvot that are written in the Torah are forever. They can't end. They will last forever, and they're going to be there even in the times of Mashiach. Those mitzvot are absolutely forever. There's nothing you can do about that. Other things are realized as time goes on. And where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, listen, I couldn't make this mitzvah for you in the first place. I couldn't make this a real Dioraisa for you in the first place. However, there will be such a time when such a thing will be necessary. You might have to do this certain thing. And because of that, the Rabbanan are given permission to add on to those mitzvot that we already have. I give you permission to add on for something that you find necessary, that you deem required for them to do at a certain time, at a certain point, for them to stop doing something, for them to add on something. The Rabbanan are given permission to do whatever they can to add on, to be able to help the Jews understand the mitzvot better. That's what they're allowed to do. And thus, there's gedarim for it. It's not like they can do whatever they want. There are gedarim in how to do that, but there's also gedarim in how to take it away. If a beis din is if they're greater in wisdom or greater in number, they could just take it away. I say, forget it, it doesn't apply anymore. An example, similar example, although it doesn't go with Chachma and Minyan, it goes with Ramosha Feinstein taking away the concept of not worrying about Cholov Stam. That the Cholov Stam issue doesn't apply nowadays because you don't have to worry because of the FDA. There's somebody else around there that's taking care of it for you. So you don't necessarily need a Jew there. Cholov Stam is good enough. Now, there are, the Chassam Sofer argues and says, no, you can't, you need Chachma and Minyan, you won't be able to break it otherwise. But there are such concepts as a Durabanan that's put out there, like Cholov Stam, Shemin Stam, other things like that, in which you can break it as long as there's a reason for what you're doing. There's such an idea of what. But we don't want people saying, I'm just not going to do it. We don't want a person saying, I'm not going to do it. So we say, listen, in the Torah, you've got to listen to what the Chachamim say. Now, what do the Chachamim say? That's a different story. But you've got to listen to what the Chachamim say. Now, listen to this example. A king can tell somebody to do something, and if he doesn't do it, what's the punishment? Death. But is that exactly what a God wanted to happen? For example, Shlomo told Shimi ben Gera, Shlomo HaMelech, when he first became king, told Shimi ben Gera, who was the Rebbe of David HaMelech. David HaMelech told him, I want you to get rid of Shimi ben Gera at the end of his life. So Shlomo HaMelech told Shimi ben Gera, do not leave Yerushalayim. Don't leave Yerushalayim, I want to keep my eye on you for the rest of your life. Shimi ben Gera left Yerushalayim, and Shlomo killed Shimi ben Gera, thus causing bad things things to happen from then on. He was commanded by David HaMelech to do so. However, he commanded him something which was sort of nonsensical. Do you think HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted Shlomo to tell Shimi not to leave Yerushalayim? No. That wasn't a mitzvah. That wasn't a command that Hashem is like, okay, this is what I want Shimon ben Gera to do. It's just something that Shlomo HaMelech told him. So although it wasn't straight out from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, still if you go against it, what's the halacha? You kill him. He's a Morid Malchus. He went up against the king. There's a Gemara, Man Malchi Rabbanan. Who are the kings? The Rabbanan. What's the concept behind that? That the Rabbanan are able to say something and they're like kings. And the fact that even if that's not exactly what the Rabbanan, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted at that time, even if that concept, the Inyan that they made up is something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, that's not, I can't let that be, does not make a difference. If the Rabbanan said it and they decided on it and they made a whole thing and everybody agreed to it and Sanhedrin and everything was put together, then we have to agree to it as well. If the Gezer was made, we have to automatically follow it, even though it might be wrong. Even though it might be, and by wrong I mean that a Kadosh Baruch Hu was sitting there in Shemayim and saying, no, I didn't want that. And if a Sanhedrin later on comes along and says, no, that was wrong, then we can listen to that Sanhedrin. But what's the mitzvah? The mitzvah is to do what? Not to do that mitzvah. It's not the Inyan that we care about, not the concept of not swimming on Shabbos that we care about. It's the Inyan of listening to the Rabbanan. You have to listen to the Rabbanan. And if you don't listen to the Rabbanan, that's going against the Torah. That would be going against the Torah. That's the concept of the Inyan Hashem doesn't care about. The mitzvah is listen to what the Rabbanan say no matter what they say. Now, listen to how that works. The basic idea is like this. If you have a piece of meat, and that piece of meat, you have a suffix, if it's pig meat or if it's cow meat, are you allowed to eat it? No. Suffix del Raisa, it's a suffix of an Isser del Raisa, you gotta go lechumra. Because why? Because it could be that it's chazer meat. And chazer is something that's disgusting in front of the eyes of Hashem. You don't want to eat it, even though it's just a suffix. It's a suffix of eating something disgusting. It's basically like saying, I'm taking this thing over here and saying, this could be meat, it also could be a piece of doo-doo. Should I eat it or should I not eat it? It's disgusting. I don't want to take the chance. What if it is the piece of doo-doo? I would never want to eat that. That's absolutely disgusting. That's that. When it comes to a Durabanan, the only thing that we have to do is listen to the Rabbanan's words. The Rabbanan never said anything about a suffix. So let's just say the Rabbanan said something that is Asur Midu Rabbanan. Let's just say turkey was Asur Midu Rabbanan. Let's just say it was, you know, because we don't have a Kabbalah for it or whatever it is. Let's say it's Asur Midu Rabbanan. Did they Asur a suffix of turkey? No. Turkey in and of itself is not Asur. Turkey in and of itself is not Asur. It's just that we have to listen to the Rabbanan. The Rabbanan said that turkey is Asur right now. If the Rabbanan told us that turkey is Asur, if it's a suffix, if it's turkey, it's not a question of eating doo-doo or eating a piece of meat. It's a question of, okay, am I going against the Rabbanan by eating this piece of meat? No, I'm not going against them. Then it's fine. So what the Ramban misunderstood, or how we understand this Ramban according to the Meshech Chachma, is that the Ramban misunderstood what is a D'oraisa, what is D'rabbanan. The idea of a D'rabbanan is the mitzvah that they made up is a D'rabbanan. The D'oraisa is listening to the words that they said, following exactly what they said. And that is not the suffix. And that's why if you have a question between a D'oraisa and a D'rabbanan, a specific mitzvah D'rabbanan versus a D'oraisa, you go with the D'oraisa over the D'rabbanan, because that Indian, that mitzvah, is not necessarily, you're still listening to the Chachamim. It's just that the Chachamim, Mistama, didn't make their idea when they have this D'oraisa around. Let's get a D'rabbanan. Let's get a D'rabbanan out here. Let's get shemen akum, shemen stam, let's say. Oil that is not, shemen that was not watched, a Jew did not pick it or whatever it is, and it's put there and a goy sells oil. So there's an issur d'rabbanan to be able to eat that oil, to drink that oil. You're not able to drink that oil. So that type of a d'rabbanan, the shemen itself is not usur. So if you have a question if this is shemen stam or if it's shemen yisrael, you can go ahead and eat it because the shemen itself is not usur. It's just that you got to listen to the words of the rabbanan. But the words of the rabbanan didn't apply if it was a suffix on what it is. So that's when the words of the Rabbanan have nothing to do with us right now. So then you're allowed to eat that oil. Then it would be perfectly fine to eat that oil.
So why did they make this?
Jars like around and say, oh, now I don't know which one it is.
I'm sorry? No, you're not allowed to do it l'chachila. But however, if it is a suffix, if afterward you go ahead and you do that, and then afterward you're like, oh no, I wanted to really have this oil, what do I do? Then yeah, you can go ahead and say, all right, it's a suffix. Suffix d'rabbanan l'kula. You can go ahead and drink it. Obviously, it's not the greatest thing in the world. And plus, it's oil. I don't know why you would want to do that in the first place. But if you did, then you went ahead and did it. Yeah.
So why did they make that statement?
Why did they make that statement? They made it for a definite Shemen Stam. Definite Shemen Stam, you shouldn't drink. However, if it's a Suffolk Shemen Stam, that's a different concept. They made it for you to listen to their words because Shemen Stam was made because we don't want the guy mixing in with the Jews. But if you go ahead and drink it, that's a different story. That's a different story. All right, I got kings. I never get to say this. The Pasuk says in Pasuk Yudalid, Som Tasima Lachamel, Kisavo Lars Asher, Shem Lokech Nosin Lachabarishta, Yashatuba, you live in the land, Vamarta Asima Lai Melech, and you'll say, I'm going to put upon myself a king, Kechola Goyim Asher Svi Bosai, like all the Goyim around me. Som Tasima Lachamel, it's a question if this is a mitzvah deal rice or not. Go make yourselves a king. The question is, they tried making themselves a king. Has anybody here learned Navi once in their lives? Just try once. If you've done it once, they tried going up to Shmuel and Avi, said to Shmuel and Avi, we'd like to make a king. And Shmuel and Avi told them, what's wrong with you guys? How could you possibly do that? Why would you want that? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, they hate me. They must hate me. Come on, it's a mitzvah. We have a whole parsha on it. What's the big deal? And what's the difference between what they're asking over here and what they were doing over there? So the Kli Yakar says an awesome answer. Here they say, Asima Alai Melech. I'll make a king upon myself. Som Tasima Alecha Melech. Place upon yourself a king. Over there, when they asked for it, they said, Tana Lanu Melech. Give to us a king. What's the difference between the word Alai and the word Lanu? What's the difference between those two words, Alai and Lanu? Difference is that when you say the word Alai, it means put on me a king. Let the king be in charge of me. Let him be in charge and tell me what to do and I'll do everything he says. I'll be afraid of him. I'll find a yira that I have for a king. And when you have a real fear for kings, it's very easy to find fear for Shemayim, to have yira Shemayim. Because the fear for a king can lead you to fear for heaven, fear for a Kaddish Baruch Hu. We don't have that concept because we're not even afraid of President Bush. We have no fear of anything. Even the queens were just sitting there like, come on, what's the big deal? But there is the concept of having a king around. That's a good king. But what they said was Tana Lanu Melech, give to us the king. Let the king be swayed according to what we want. Give us the king to be able to, for us to make our own decisions, for the king to do things. Exactly. That's a problem. That you're not allowed to do. Says Chassam Sofer and adds on just a little bit more. Why was it good? What does that mean, like all the goyim that are around me? Why would you want to be like the goyim around you? The concept is, every single one of the goyim, the Ayin nations of the world, the 70 nations of the world, each one of them has a malach and shemayim that surrounds the Kisei HaKavod. That malach takes in all the hashpa, all the shefa, all the goodness from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and brings it down to their nation through the king. The malach has a direct correspondence with the king. The king doesn't realize it, but he has a direct correspondence with that king, and the king, through his dreams or through other things, knows what's going on in shemayim by those malachim. That's why we only know of dreams of malachim, of kings, to see like what's going on, like by Paro. And although we did that, the butler and stuff like that, the king of Paro had something that was huge for the nation. The king of Achashverosh had something that was huge for everybody around. There's always dreams that affect the kings, and the kings realize there's something over there. Plishtim, Avimelech, Melech Plishtim had a huge dream that got him to stay away from Sarayimenu. We know we talked to HaKadosh Baruch Hu because they're able to have concepts within their malachim, within the angels that are up there in the sky. That Shefa goes down through the malach and gives it over to those kingdoms, to every single one of the kingdoms, for whatever they need. The Jews don't have that because our malach is HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. We go straight to the Kisei HaKavod. We're direct from the Kisei HaKavod itself. However, you might want a king to have a more direct correspondence instead of you guys individually, instead of you guys davening and asking for a clear hashpa straight to God, which is hard because that means you got to concentrate during your davening. Let the king do that for you, which obviously means that the king has to be the holiest, greatest person out there, and that's the only way that he's going to be so great that he'll be able to bring down the hashpa from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you might ask for a king to do the work for you, just like all the other kings do it for their nations. We'll have a king that's like that, so then you can do it, but you got to make sure that the king is the greatest guy in the generation. That's why Shaul HaMelech would have been king. When he was an anav, he was a tremendous person to be able to become king. But when he did something wrong, Hashem said, I can't give Hashpa straight through him. You got to find somebody else. And David HaMelech became king. Then Shlomo HaMelech. And that's why throughout the whole kingdom of Bnei David, it always says they were good, just not like David HaMelech. Because they did have tremendous concepts, but they weren't like David HaMelech. And to be a real good king, you have to be able to bring down Hashpa from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They weren't able to do that. And that's why it was a bit of a problem that people weren't on that level to be able to get up there. This is from Rabbi Shach. left it. Because he's not here, I might as well say over one of his boards. It's an unbelievable board. Louis Arbelo Sousa. A king is not allowed to have too many horses. Why in the world do we care about horses? Why do we care about how many horses he has? Money? I can understand there's a lot of gaiva. Woman? I can understand there's a lot of taiva. That I understand. But horses? What does that have to do with anything? So horses, and you might go back to Mitzrayim because of it? What kind of a fool is going to be, all right, guys, let's go live in Egypt. There's just so many horses there. I just can't take it anymore. I'm going to have a house right in Egypt just to grab these horses. Who's going to be such an idiot to be able to say such a thing? Why in the world would that be out there? Now, we know that Asus is for Gvura. Strength, power, horsepower for a car is straight out from horses. That's where we get the concept of horsepower from, because horses are it's a strength. You see a Mustang, and you see that horse out there, and you're just like, wow, that's strong. That's really strong. You see the strength in a horse. You see the Gvura within a horse. The Goyim take that to the extreme and base their wars around how many horses they have. How many horses are we going to have to be able to fight? How many horses are we going to have to be able to do this and do that? That's lo bigvura sesus yechbots. Don't desire the Gvura of the horse. And then Eila Barechev, Eila Basusim. These guys by chariots and these guys by horses. That's what we say during our davening every single day. We say it every single day that we say that all these people base everything on susim, on horses, on their tanks, on their planes, on their boats, and all the power that they have around there. The bad thing for our king to be able to have is for our king to say, we've got horses, we'll be able to win the war. For Israelis to say, we have an army, we'll be able to defeat any nation that's out there. It's the worst thing we could possibly say. We don't base ourselves on our army, we base ourselves on a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Yes, we need an army for Ishtablus, but we shouldn't say to ourselves, well, our army is the end all. We have the greatest army out there, and therefore we'll defeat the Arabs. No! We have a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore we'll be able to defeat the Arabs with the army that we have right now.
Well, you know, Israel goes through the greatest intelligence, though.
The greatest intelligence, and they say that also. They say it all out there. There's a tremendous amount that's out there in which you'll say, you'll blame it on everything else. You know, they always say, like, if something good happens, you'll say it was me. If something bad happens, you'll say it's because of him. It wasn't me. No, it was he messed it up. Oh, well, we had no idea that happened. It was him. It was that guy's fault. You know, that's always what happens. You always think it's your own. It's never your own. It's a Kadosh Baruch Hu who's doing it for you and letting it be through your horses, letting it be through everything that you have. We get that concept through the Chashmonai. We get that concept from the Chafetz Chaim that said that if he was younger, he would fight against the Bolsheviks with 100 Talmidim and he'd defeat the whole Russian army. He said that he would fight with 100 Bachurim, no weapons, and he would defeat the entire Russian army. We have that concept of like a Talmud Chacham, of somebody going out there and being able to defeat everybody, not because of that. So it's not going back to Egypt. It's going back to the Egyptian mentality. The Egyptian mentality of horses win wars. Horses win wars. And that's why during Oz Yashir, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say? Sus v'rachvo rama vayam. The horse and his chariot we threw down in the sea. That sus we threw down in the sea. We took those horses of Mitzrayim. You guys think you have power? HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have one weapon on them and I'll destroy all of you. Now one of you is going to survive. Maybe Paro. Now one of you is going to survive normally. That's the idea behind it. That's the idea behind this whole sus thing. But the panemius of this sus is really, really good. The idea behind this sus is a really unbelievable thing. And by the way, that's the reason why David HaMelech never rides on a sus. He rides on a parrot, on a mule. He doesn't ride on a horse because a horse is full of gaiva. He rides on a mule instead. Mashiach is supposed to come on a donkey. A donkey or a chamor that comes out there. Not a horse. A horse is too much gaiva. It's got to be something else and something different. So what's the pshat? The panemius of a sus is unbelievably good. The pshat behind it is, we know David HaMelech Yoshan Shina Sus. David HaMelech's sleep was the sleep of a horse. That meant Shisin Nishmi. He would sleep for 60 breaths, about the amount of time, 3 minutes, some say 30 minutes, whatever it is. Then he would immediately wake up and learn Torah. He would have like a cat nap, and then he would wake up immediately. Why say Yoshan Shina Sus? What's up with the horse sleeping that amount of time? What's up with that? The idea is like this. David has a connection with the Sus like this. David is a Dalid and a Dalid. That's David's name is Dalid Vidalid. Dalid Vidalid. Dalid is what? Dalas. Dalas means poor. Dalas Vidalas. David Melo stands for David, Dalas Vidalas. He's poorer and poorer. He puts himself down and down and down. He was an Anav who kept bringing himself more down and down and down, throwing himself down in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu and saying, Hashem, you're the one in charge. And you think when that guy goes to sleep at night, it's going to be the biggest scaredy cat in the world. Because every time he's about to go to sleep, you know, a Kadosh Baruch Hu says to him, you know, he'll be scared of like anything. Oh, there's a spider! Oh. because he's such a small guy, he doesn't care, he has no strength within himself, he won't be able to fight anything. No, for that he's so mech on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so mech Hashem l'chol anoplim, David HaMelech says he's so mech on samach v'samach, he's so mech on Hashem and so mech on Hashem again. David and Sus are the same concepts of David, Dalid, Vav, Dalid, Samach, Vav, Samach. Dalas v'dalas, he's very poor and very poor, but he's so mech on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the idea behind a Sus, that a Sus will allow you to understand that even though it's your horse that's fighting, it's not really the horse, it's behind the horse that's the power. It's the smicha on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a Sumech, be relying on God that'll really win the war. That's the concept behind a Sus, that's the idea behind it. It's all from Rabbi Shachter. There's a bit extra to that. There's a Ben Ish Chai in Sukkah, Daf Chav Zayin, Chav Vav Amabez, I'm sorry, that explains it, but that's not for now. We're not going to go through that right now.
Is so the deepest level of learning that there is?
Yeah.
Samach V'dalet.
Samach V'dalet. That's very cute. That's very cute. Did anybody hear that? Sod, the secrets of the Torah, the Kabbalah behind it, is Samach V'dalet, is being Dalas, bringing yourself down, and then being Someh HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's the combination between the two. That's a very, very good call. That's a very, very good concept. Very, very good. All right. I'm not going to get to the Adam Zoman. I'm going to freak you out. So the end of the Parsha, normally Parsha Shoftim is all about magic. And I go into the magic concepts and everything, and the Shadim and everything like that, Achiz Zeinayim, like all the crazy stuff. Decided not to do this year because I wanted to stay over these real boards over here, but I will give you my freak out board at the very end. The very end, we talk about Igal Arufa. What basically happens is you find a corpse in the ground. It's in between two cities. You measure them between the two cities. The city closest to that corpse will bring a korban to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And that korban is known as the Igal Arufa. This is not a regular korban. You don't bring it to the Beis Hamikdash or anything. You take this Igal Arufa, you take this cow that has never worked before in its life, bring it down to a hard land, a harsh swamp land, and you take an axe, the back of the axe, you smash it on the back of its head, kill the cow, and leave it there, and just let it be there, and say, Yadenu lo shafchu es adam hazeh, we didn't spill this blood, we didn't do all this, please HaKadosh Baruch Hu have a kapara for this guy. What in the world are we doing? What in the world is going on here? So, there is a first in Yonas ibn Uzziel. Yonas ibn Uzziel says, this is the first thing that got me all going, I'm going to tell you five opinions all together, five opinions of this concept. Number one, Yonas ibn Uzziel says, what happens is, from the cow's stomach, form an army of worms. An army of worms forms from that cow's stomach. They go out and find the one who killed that dead guy, the dead body that they found. They find the killer, jump him, take him, all the worms jump that guy, and then drag him over to Basin. Take him all the way to Basin. All these little worms come and drag him to Basin. Now, if Basin is sitting there and they see that happening, they know what's going on. They realize there's something that this guy must have done. They say that the idea is Eswa Gala is a gematria of 514, which is the same gematria as Tola Ava, that the worms come. That the worms come from the cow itself. Now the Panach Raza says there's another concept, and this is the second opinion. Nachal Esan. Nachal Esan is a hard land. The pshat is, it's hard because the dead man's body gets worms inside it. Those worms escape from the dead man's body, crawl out from that body, go and find the killer, take the killer and kill him. Choke him to death by sending the worms down his throat and kill him for everything that happened. And the remez is, at the very end of the letters, the end of the letters are V'ato Tevayer Dam Naki, and you will destroy the innocent blood. V'ato Tevayer Dam Naki, the last letters are Reish Hei Reish Mem Yud. That stands for Rima, which are worms. Says the Panach Raza, the reason why it's at the end of the words, the reason why we're having this thing from the end of the word is because it comes at the sof of the other. At the death of the person, that's when these worms will come. And it comes after the death of a person. That's why it's mixed up also. They come within the body of the dead guy. Within that body of the dead guy, so they come out and they go grab him. Now the Rabbeinu Bechaya says, if we're roi, if we're fitting, then what happens is, the cow itself, the Egel Arufa, when it's going down there, instead of leading itself down to the Nachal Esan, will take a quick turn and go to the house of the killer. And it'll stand there by the house of the killer and moo. And it'll just stand there mooing until Basin finds the guy and says, like, is there a reason why you know this cow? And they'll end up finding out that this guy's the killer. That's if we're Zocha. If we're not Zocha, then he says a bit differently. A huge worm comes from the cow and goes and it kills the guy. So instead of there being an army of worms, platforms that does it. There's a massive blob that goes ahead and does it. I don't know. I think they based a movie on this, but a blob comes, a huge massive worm comes and takes the guy and just kills him and kills him for everything that he's done. That's number three. The Meir HaSeinayim says, and this is number four, instead of killing him, it drags him to Basin. You have a huge worm that wraps around him and then drags him over to Basin. I would die just out of, I've got a massive worm all around me. That's got to freak me out. I'm not so sure my heart is going to be able to take that. But the fifth opinion is a Razin Amer. Razin Amer says a bit differently. It's a massive worm, but not so huge. It sticks to his body. Sticks to his clothes on the outside. So a huge worm comes and just sticks there. It's like, oh my God, get it off me. You try to get it off, and it won't come off. And everybody starts yelling and starts screaming and starts saying, like, what's going on here? What's going on here? No matter what you do, you won't be able to get the worm off the clothes. People will talk about it. Eventually, somebody who knows Kabbalah will hear about it, find out that that happened with the worm, know this whole concept of the worms within the Egel Arufa, and say, ah, I know what happened here. This guy's a murderer. Go and get the guy, take him over to Bezin, and then they'll know what to do. They'll know what to do with him. I think they'll kill him with the shame of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the concept of the Egel Arufa. So don't think that Egel Arufa is just taking this cow and then killing it, and that's it. There's worms involved. Always worms involved. That's the idea behind it. Five different opinions on how these worms are involved exactly. Is it an army of worms that goes and drags him to Bezin? An army of worms that kills him? A massive worm that kills him? A massive worm that drags him to Bezin? Or a massive worm that as massive as the others that goes and sticks to his body until everybody freaks out and says, what's going on here? And a Makobo finds out about it and says, ah, ha, 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 I've heard of this before because I was in a shir once and I heard about all this and I know that this is what ends up happening with this worm over here. Either way, yeah.
Seriously, back then, everybody who killed somebody...
If there was a case of the Egel Arufa and they brought the Egel, then yes. They went ahead and they had this concept of the worms going out there. I will tell you, very quickly, let's just say this out, because we did in Makos. We always have this concept in Adam Zolomon. It comes from this week's parsha, Yud Tes, Perak Yud Tes, Pasuk Yud Tes, of Im Horgu, Lo Nehergen. Im Lo Horgu, Nehergen. I don't know if anybody's done Makos before, but those who have done it, you'll know what I mean. If the Adam Zolomon killed a guy, then even if they're found to be Zomim later, they're not killed. But if they don't kill the guy yet, then the Adam Zolomon are killed. And the question is why? If they're killed, if they don't kill the guy, Kol Shekin, if they killed the guy, they should be killed. They caused somebody to die. And they're false witnesses. So why in the world shouldn't they be killed? So there's an unbelievable answer. It's mentioned by the Moshe of Zakenim, and it's explained a little bit by the Meshach Chachma.
40 lashes, right? You'd rather get death than 40 lashes.
No, you wouldn't. If I would offer you 40 lashes right now or to kill you, you'd
that's
go with death?
That's right there. So.
Would you go with death?
Well, 40 lashes?
No, you wouldn't. I'm gonna answer for you. You wouldn't. You're not going to. 30 lashes is a tremendous amount. Trust me, it is. I know. But it's not as much as death. Death is going to be a lot worse. What? Yeah, and you also stop before the guy dies. Yeah, you might be an invalid for the rest of your life, which will be fun in many different ways. But the fact is, no, you would still go with the Makis, because Makis is still, hopefully, Paul, you'll be able to take at least 3. I know you'll take 3. Maybe 6, you know, if you're lucky. Maybe you'll have 6. You'll be able to do it. Yeah, you have that guy. I still remember there was a guy who told me when we were learning Makis that he's just like, anytime they're going to try to do it, there's a way of getting out of it by going to the bathroom. He says, anytime they try to give me Makis, I'll just go to the bathroom by myself. I'll be done with it. So I'm like, that might be embarrassing. That might be just, that's kind of the point. Like, he'll go to the bathroom on himself, just be like, oh man, no, oh, look at him. Just be like, yeah, I'll do it every time. It's a little bit off. So what's the shot behind this? The Moshe Zakenim explains. If Lo Horgu, if they don't kill the guy yet, the relatives of the guys, let's just say, Reuven and Shimon come to testify about Levi. The relatives of Levi, since Levi's not killed yet, they don't care enough yet to hire Mazimin, to hire Adim to go and be Mazim those guys, because the guy's not dead yet. They might hire Machishin, deniers, people that will say, no, you weren't. Come on, buddies. There's no way you saw it, because we were with Levi at that time, and Levi wasn't with you guys at that time. There'll be Machishin, there'll be deniers that will come into court, but there won't be Mazimin, which will kill the Adim Zomin. They won't hire Mazimin because they don't care enough yet. Only if they go ahead and kill Levi. If they kill Levi, that's when the relatives of Levi say, now we're going to take revenge. What's the revenge? To kill Reuven and Shimon. How can you kill Reuven and Shimon? By hiring Mazimin. So we say, if they do that, then nobody will ever want to testify as aidim to a murder case. Because what will happen? The relatives will immediately hire Mazimin, and even if they kill Levi, these guys will be killed. Reuven and Shimon will be killed, and that'll be at a time when the relatives are so PO'd, they're so upset, they'll do anything to get back at Reuven and Shimon, even hire false aidim to testify against those guys. We don't want that to happen. So because of that, we say, if they killed, lo nehargin. We don't allow them to be killed. So that the relatives, no matter what they do, even if they hire Mazimin, they'll never be able to kill Reuven and Shimon.
Before they go to the city of refuge, like a mitzvah for them to go after them?
That's if somebody killed. This is by aidim. This has nothing to do with running to an ir miklat. This has to do with just two people watching a murder happen. So what happens at that point? Those two people that killed, what will happen to them? The relatives will want to take revenge on Levi. So we say, im horgu, lo nehargu. We don't allow them to kill. We don't allow those aidim's only to be killed, because otherwise there will be problems. It'll happen every single time. All right, we'll stop with that, guys.